All right, welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil on the ones and twos. Wow, Sherry, not one, but two guests today. A special guest, and a surprise guest.
I'm excited.
Our special guest, Cincinnati FOP President Dan Hills. And the surprise guest is a blast from the past. Hang on after the Dan Hills interview momentarily, and you'll find out who that person is. Sherry, before we jump to Dan Hills, big week. Restaurants, bars, barbershops, and salons open up here on coming up on Friday. What's the first thing you're going to do on Friday?
If by getting my hair done at 9 a.m., you mean first thing, then that.
Are you really right out of the gate?
Oh, yeah.
On Friday? I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
I have a lot of hair. It's a big fat mess.
I need to schedule my haircut.
I need to get on that.
Are you excited about, and by the way, bars and restaurants, that's outside seating only. If those places have outdoor seating, that's what's coming up. And then next week is when indoor seating at bars and restaurants, I believe it's the 18th or 21st.
A lot of fanfare surrounding all this. People are really excited for, you know, there's going to be social distancing. There might be some masks, but people are excited for some semblance of normalcy outside of their homes, I think.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Great stuff. Check out all our coverage, our Statehouse folks, Jesse Malmert, Jackie Borchert. They're covering everything coming out of Governor DeWine's office and press conferences and Amy Acton, and they'll have all the latest updates on Cincinnati.com. But now, without further ado, let's jump to this into this two guest episode and bring in FOP President Dan Hills. Special guest time here on the That's the Cincinnati podcast. Pleased to welcome FOP President Sergeant Dan Hills. Dan, thanks for joining us today.
You bet, Jason. Great to talk to you guys.
So, I mean, the one thing I think that is absolutely clear is that we need the police department more than ever right now. And so we are heading into a very serious period of city cuts. The numbers are absolutely staggering. The last number we heard was a $90 million deficit for the budget period we're getting ready to go in starting July 1. And they're hopeful for federal stimulus money, but you can't base a budget on hope.
And so it
is pretty concerning without actually having any sort of knowing what that help is going to look like. What do you think that's going to mean for the police department?
Well, you know, obviously we're their biggest budget item, so they're going to have to, you know, come and have some discussions if that federal money doesn't come through. But, you know, with concessions or requests for concessions, I think you're going to see not a very positive response from these officers out there doing a job. Like I just mentioned, I told Mr. Smitherman in the Law and Public Safety meeting that police officers are like the forgotten stepchildren of the COVID disaster. And that's because of the PPE things I mentioned, the fact that we have to go out and engage with people. One thing that, you know, had really bothered us was that they were treating different departments differently. Fire, because they had some COVID infections, just a couple, but they were able to trace them and say, oh, we believe, you never know where you got your COVID infection. You can believe it, but we believe it came from this other person that was positive in the firehouse or whatever. Well, we're dealing with multiple people every day without as much PPE, and just because we can't finger a person and say, well, I think I got it from this person, because if the fire was the first to give their personnel administrative leave rather than them taking their own time. And we had to push and get that. They were putting some firemen up in hotels. The city was, to prevent them from taking the COVID back home to their families, because they also were in the same firehouse or whatever. And we have police officers who had at risk family members and were afraid to go home because of their job exposing them to so many people. And we had to get the Blue Line Foundation to put our folks up in hotel. Everybody loves a fireman, and I love firemen too. But the police at times have been put in the very front line of this thing, and there seems to be little acknowledgement of that. So if they come to us and say, hey, we want you to give up X, Y, and Z, and if you have time, I'll tell you another little history lesson that the police have learned on this, and that is back during the financial crisis, they came to both police and fire and said, will you give us concessions? Well, the police voted and gave some concessions, and the fire did not. And the message was, if you don't give concessions, we're going to have to lay off. Well, the police gave concessions, and therefore there were no layoffs. The fire did not give concessions, and guess what? No firemen got laid off either. And an intelligence gathering later on reported they weren't going to lay off anybody anyway. It was just a technique. So even though it's not the same people necessarily in the bureaucracy and the city government, it's a lesson that stung, and I can see where our members will have trouble with concessions. So now they'll have a choice between layoffs or possibly some other strategy. And the one that I think they should probably look at is some sort of buyout. There's somewhere around 190 to 200 police officers that are pension eligible today. They can walk out the door today. And could you encourage them to walk out the door? And then you get people that are, you know, near the end of their careers, rather than the people who are fresh starting their careers. I think it might be a better investment for the city to try to hang on to their people who are going to be serving them for the next 25, 30 years, rather than the people who have 1 year, 2 years, or, you know, three or four left.
Because the working theory right now, I will say, this is kind of what we've heard in some budget committee meetings, is, you know, you go from the bottom. So the police recruit classes, last in, that's where they would be headed. But those are the younger, you know, they don't make as much money, you know, and the more active. And then those are really who you're seeing on patrol. If you take from, you know, the other side, it reshuffles. That's going to reshuffle. If you do that as it's kind of planned, people who, you know, in these upper ranks, then they have to flow back down to patrol. And it's a huge reshuffling in that kind of mentality. Whereas in the upper ranks, you're just looking at the retirements.
Yeah, you nailed a point exactly. They get paid more in their longevity and everything else. But you can't force the more senior people to leave. Contractually, you have to take from the bottom. If you take from the bottom, that's why I said, if you could find some sort of way to buy out or encourage or help people make the decision where, you know, I was going to leave next year, but now I'll leave now. That could save the city an awful lot of money. And then they could, you know, if they restructure, look at some of the reduction of command officers or higher ranks or something of that nature, so you can leave, like you said, the people that are down there on the street making those radio runs and dealing with that violence each and every day. I think that would be a wiser move if that comes down to it, that they have to reduce the amount of Cincinnati police officers that are on the payroll.
Can the city afford not to have a recruit class? Because we're also hearing that. No recruit classes. Fires, their complement's down, I know, 20 people. And so they're at, like, a critical, like, if we don't have as many firefighters, then the brownouts begin again, which is not running every engine company. Can you see, are we going to be able to be okay if we don't have recruit classes?
Well, I think it's okay there's a broad thing in okay. I think that there's going to be shortages. There's going to be times where people will call, and you've heard us talk about code zeros in the past. And there's going to be times when you're going to want the police, and it'll be more difficult to call if we don't have a steady group coming in to replace those that are leaving. It will be more and more difficult, and we'll have to limit services more and more. You know, if you keep the most essential people on the street, you know, the biggest group on the street, then eventually some of the other things we do are going to fall by the wayside. The investigations and some of the things that we maybe had looked into the past, we might not be able to look into as much. You might not be able to get a detective to do a crime scene at your house if you've been broken into or something of that nature. If we have to restructure because the budget being that badly hit, that you have to reduce the number of Cincinnati policemen. So, okay, what's your definition of okay? If you live in the city of Cincinnati and want somebody to come and print your house after a burglary, it's probably not okay that we don't have that type of service that we currently have now. If you're calling the police because there's a fight outside your door and you're told that right now that we're at code zero, and we you know, we'll get there when we get there, that's probably not okay to you if you live in an apartment and you hear that there's you know, people getting their butts kicked right outside your door. That's not okay. But is it potentially a reality? That's what we're being told, that there's that much shortage of money that they're going to have to find a way to make huge cuts in the Cincinnati Police Department. And huge cuts at some point probably mean that they're going to look at less personnel. And like I said, I hope they invest the time and try to figure out a way to encourage retirements rather than to just simply lay people off.
Okay, here you go. You ready? This is the hard question.
All right.
have they given you a number? They're being very
No. There have been very little communication. I'll say next to none with the union. Now, I've heard what they talked to the command officers about. But, you know, the mayor reached out to me to say, hey, can you push Portman? And, you know, of course, the mayor's a Democrat. He thinks the problems up in the House and Senate are with the Republicans. So can you talk to Winstrup and Shabbat and Portman? And, you know, I've talked to Winstrup and Shabbat and told them how the local governments need these funds to keep police, fire and sanitation running. And I got a hold of Portman's office. I didn't get to talk to the senator directly. And I gave my two cents, and I know the mayor's doing the same. And so is every mid-sized city all across this country, all saying we can't continue to operate without revenues, and we need police, fire, sanitation, maybe every now and then a pothole filled, especially when it gets to be the size of a small SUV. You need to be able to do that thing. So,
in Cincinnati, no.
Dan, do you have any concerns as this budget thing is looming about this council? And you have a very pro police mayor and vice mayor. Any concerns though about this council, which has a history of pushing pet projects, of prioritizing those at the expense of the police department? And look, let me, I'll just be honest that, you know, the one that comes to mind is the streetcar and $1.4 million in the budget, and probably going to be more than that this year. Do you have any concerns there about that kind of a dynamic coming into play here?
It sounds almost like a rhetorical question, Jason. Obviously, you know, anybody that has a conservative bone in their body, and I don't try to hide that fact too much, that I'm more conservative Republican in my politics, and anybody that is pro law and order looks at a lot of what the city of Cincinnati and its council does in spending is absolutely ridiculous. And of course, the streetcar is that finest example, which leads to my joke. You know, where is the safest place to be as far as social distancing goes during the COVID emergency? And that was in a Cincinnati streetcar. And I talked about in New York City, the subways was such a terrible place to spread, but not in a Cincinnati streetcar. You were safe as could be because there was nobody within 30 feet of you. You were in a sealed tube, all protected from any possibility of infection whatsoever. You're all by yourself. And because for the entire time this subway's been running, I've been, you know, driving around downtown and seeing them, and I'm looking and thinking, boy, that was even more stupid than I ever guessed it would be. And but now I know they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place when it comes to the federal funds and how to manage that. City Council got themselves into it. I hope they can figure it out. I would love it if the feds could say, you know what, we're going to free, because of the COVID stuff, we're going to continue to be able to send you whatever we're going to send you, but shut that dumb thing down. And that would be great. I imagine that would help a little. But yeah, they always pet project. They always spend. That's the nature of politics. And I'm not naive enough to think that only Democrats do that. I know politics do that. Politics do that all the time. So,
I mean, when you really sit and think about it, and I know you have, like, I'll be damned if they're going to lay off and compromise public safety and basic, you know, basic things of government, tenets of government, which is public safety, for, like you said, a streetcar that's going to run around downtown and all these other projects they spent money on that, you know, operating money, that is. I mean, are you going to make your voice heard on that type of thing if that comes to pass? And
well, that's another rhetorical question, Jason. Of course I am. That's the reason I enjoy this job is to call out stupid. And like I said, sometimes in the city of Cincinnati, it's one of the easiest jobs there is to do, because stupid will be right there in front of you, demanding that you call it out. And this is going to be one of those times when if there isn't a certain level of common sense, I hope there are many. Good. And I hope there's a crowd of people that are all coming out and saying, no, give us our basic services, because when I call 911 because somebody's kicking in my door, I want to hear we'll be right there. And that's right. What I want to hear. And if that isn't the case, then the citizens aren't being properly served.
Okay. Sherry?
It's going to be quite a budget season. I know that budget inside and out at this point, and I'm just looking at it and I'm like, these are going to be some really tough decisions.
They are.
If people are going to expect to be safe, they're going to expect. I mean, we had earlier this year, I was just talking to one of our editors, we had the fire hydrants in the city. We learned that all of them don't work. I mean, there are things that have to get done. And it's going to really come down to basic services. They've been saying it for years, and they're going to have to meet it this time.
Yes, that's the best I've heard it. They have to mean it this time.
Yeah,
because they have no choice. And if they go out there and they do stupid pet projects, we've really elected the wrong bunch of folks. That's for sure.
You, as FOP president, one of your own is running for sheriff, Lieutenant Bruce Hoffbauer, recently retired this spring from the Cincinnati Police Department after a long distinguished career, and running for sheriff now. Can you talk about that? I know in your role right now, can you talk about Bruce and whether the department or the FOP will be getting behind him, or what can you say about him running for sheriff?
Well, I won't be shy here at all. Now, officially, okay. officially,
is that a word anyone's ever used to describe you? Just curious.
I didn't know, like, you know, in the role that you have, like, if you're able to really even talk about.
Well, you know, that's why I sit there. I'll take off my FOP president hat for a second, and I'll just put on my Dan Hill hat.
Great.
I have the First Amendment on my side.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to tell you this, that, you know, I had some interest in possibly pursuing the sheriff's position. And I talked to Bruce about it, and because I had that name recognition, we talked to Alex Tarantafilo, and I thought, you know, this could be a good thing. But the more I talked to Bruce, said, you know, I think I'd actually like the top spot. And I thought, well, then I'm out. Because you're the guy that I would have needed to run it. You're the guy that is most deserving to be the sheriff. I've said for probably, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, like, man, if they could only allow the police department to include police lieutenants in consideration for police chief, I know who I'd want to be the police chief, and that's Bruce Hoffbauer. Hmm. Bruce Hoffbauer is just, he's an outstanding leader. I'm not going to hide from him. He's a great friend of mine too. But he's tough as nails when it comes to following the rules and making his officers be professionals and look professional. But he's also very wise in how he knows the community and knows how to deal with big problems. Hingham County's going to be blessed to have Bruce Hoffbauer as the sheriff, and I believe he's going to win. And I believe that that as tough as things are going to be with the budget problems that they're going to have, with the problems that they had beforehand, I think it's going to be a good piece better because of having really professional leadership up top there. I like Sheriff Neal. He's a very, very nice man. But I think he was just, I think he was over his head with that job. I think it's a very, very tough job. And, I was kind of shocked with what happened in that primary. But I think that makes it all the more certain that Bruce Hoffbauer will be our next sheriff. And I hope the FOP and the endorsement committee chooses Bruce. I appoint our endorsement committee. Mm-hmm. We call it the 1900 Club. But I can tell you that I do not, and it might be hard for some folks in politics to believe this, I do not micromanage these folks. I send mm-hmm. them on their own way. Sometimes they do endorsements I agree with. Sometimes they do endorsements that I don't agree with. I will be shocked if they do not endorse Bruce Hoffbauer. I'd be more than shocked. Probably have to paddle me at the ER or something like that if they don't endorse Bruce Hoffbauer. But we'll wait and see before it's officially said.
Your job though is political in a little bit of a nature. You are elected by the membership. Where do we stand in that process right now? Like, how long do you have left in your term? Like, it's hard to keep track of.
Okay, well, I was elected December of 2015 to my first 2-year term, and that there was actually an election in that one, as I won against the former FOP president. Since then, in December of 17 and December of 19, nobody opposed me in the elections. I don't know if you've ever heard of or heard us talk about deferred retirement option. I am in my deferred retirement option plan, and you're maxed out at 8 years at that. So at the end of this term in 2021, I only have a few months left that I can serve on the Cincinnati Police Department. And myself and this union are exploring a way. You can always say served as a retired member of the FOP, but you really didn't get paid for it because you don't get the release from the city. You get I get a small stipend from the members and the use of the FOP car. But those two things do not equate a job. So they would have to, if the FOP, and it is being explored a way to pay a retired member, and maybe some other retired members who want to run for the position. If that happens, maybe an active member would want to run for the position. And I would be defeated. That could happen. But if it does happen, then maybe I could still be in your guys' hair every now and then for a few more years out.
So that term is, when is your term up?
My term is up in December of 21. And like I said, hopefully.
But you have to retire before then?
I have to retire 4 months after that from the police department. I have to retire unless I want to forgo all my money in a drop account and that's not going to happen.
The tentative idea would be for membership then to pay the president's salary?
Yeah, we have a constitution in the FOP. And like I said, currently the constitution and the contract, the union contract gives you what's called release. And that means I get the base salary of whatever your rank is. I'm a sergeant. And I get to do the duties of the president. I don't have to report and do the job that I was doing right beforehand, which is a sergeant in District 3.
Which all the unions are like that. They all have some provisions that allow, there's still city employees, but they do the work of the unions.
Yes, they get released. I know Matt Alter has the same thing. I didn't really know that much about the other unions. But as far as the FOP, what they pay out of their budget is a stipend and a vehicle. And like I said, those two things would not be enough for me to sustain myself. Because I'd be no longer being paid by the city. So if the union were to change its constitution and that's being looked into, then I would run again. And of course, in politics, there's no guarantees. Somebody could run against me in December of 21 and I could still be out. But right now, my term is ending in December of 21.
Would you have like a little campaign slogan that was like, I got everybody raises? you were behind the push to make, our pay more comparison to other cities. That was a big thing in 2016 for all the different unions. And you took a hard line to make sure the pay was equal. And that was extremely controversial. One of the biggest stories I've covered since taking over the city beat in 2014. But that did happen, and it would be hard to imagine that people don't know that.
No, I think they know that. I think I still have a lot of support. But is anything there is in politics, there's people that were less satisfied with this last contract. And our next contract's going to be a bear, obviously, because of the COVID-19 and the budget. So, anytime you think that anytime you go thinking that you're loved by everybody in politics, you're a fool.
When is the
contract's up next May. So we got a year left. And like I said, right in the middle of this, that's going to be a very hard contract to negotiate. And here I was hoping to, if it were to be my last, to have one more great contract for the men and women of the Cincinnati Police Department. And then we get smacked up the side of the head with COVID. So, wish me luck. I'm going to, I'm going to do my best. The way she's going to do our best. Our hired counsel is going to do its best to see that the members are treated fairly in these very, very difficult times. And then, maybe what you said before, Sherry, I might be judged quite a bit on that contract because people have short memories. They have short memories of good things. They have much longer memories of when they're disappointed. That's another thing I've noticed very quickly in politics is that contract you talk about. I'm extremely proud of that contract. Yes, extremely proud of the stand I took. But I'm more likely to hear from somebody that was disappointed in the last contract or disappointed in something else that the union was involved in. And that's, I'm not complaining. That's just the nature of the beast when it comes to representation and politics.
You mentioned politics. You said, you thought about running for sheriff. You did jump in and run for commissioner for a little bit and then had to step back from that. Is it something you could see yourself coming back to at some point? Maybe running for public office?
Yeah, that was softball. That way, you didn't hit me with, you really screwed that up, didn't you? Because my answer would have been, yeah, I did. I didn't consult enough people around me and the union and how they would react to me doing this. I did it a lot for the hopes of helping Joe Dieters and helping Bruce Hoffbauer, and that they would have to burn some money that race, and I didn't pay enough attention to the membership that I currently represent and most importantly represent. So yeah, come on, Jason, you can hit me a little harder than that.
I think you've already addressed that though, right?
In my fashion of transparency, I kind of wrote a letter. Maybe I slapped on the Facebook or something saying, that I screwed that up and apologize. But yeah, can I ever see myself in politics in the future, whether it's commissioner or wherever? Yeah, I find it attractive. I think there are certain positives that I have and that is that I'm very, very patriotic. I have next to no greed factor at all. I just have to have enough to support myself and get a get a fish sandwich and a beer here and there. And so I see myself as somebody that's equipped well to be loyal to whatever group it is I'm serving, as I try to just represent whoever I am, and in this case it's police officers, the very best I can. And I'd love to consider representing other groups in the future, but right now I got to focus on the job I'm doing.
You know, I have to say, like, this conversation is almost like, this is like what we talk. Some of the podcasts are different and they're more like chatty, and this is like an interview. This is what it's like. If I call you on the phone and I need to talk about a city subject, like, this is absolutely what it's like. And everyone isn't like that. Like, with a politician, sometimes there's a lot of couching of comments, but you just say, you know, what you're going to say. And there's never like, well, I don't want to say that, or that probably wouldn't go over well. It's like, you just talk real. And yeah. So this is, of all the podcasts we've done, I honestly feel like this is the most of like what an actual interview is like. You just, you know, talk about the things and then you just give the answers.
Well, I appreciate that. I guess my question is, I don't know how we got in society to where it isn't like that. I mean, say, take me or leave me. It's your choice. You again, I appreciate you bringing up the contract and 16, and I think there are people that are appreciative, but I can tell you without any doubt, there's plenty of people in this FOP, in this body, that don't care for Dan Hills very much. And that's okay too. I'd rather be transparent, open about who I am. And if you like what I got to say and you believe in me, then vote for me. If you think that you can find somebody better, and heck, who knows who's around the corner next that has interest in this job or whatever political position, if they can serve you better, then it's up to God, and I'll do whatever he assigns me next, whether that's a driving job or delivery job or something, or politics. I've been a policeman for a long, long time and really loved it. But I don't really consider what I'm doing now being a policeman. I consider I'm a representative of policemen. And so whatever road I'm sent down next, that's the one I'll take.
Great stuff, Dan. Thanks. This is great. Really always appreciate you're always candid. I'll add to what Sherry said. You know, I can remember, you know, I've praised the FOP, I've criticized the FOP, and you know what, you're one of those folks that always picks up the phone, always is ready to answer questions, ready to represent your members, and I have a lot of respect for that, and just thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, I've enjoyed it, and I enjoy working with you and reading both you guys write. And thanks to your service to the city as well.
Thank you.
All right, talk to you.
Talk to you later, Dan. Thanks so much.
All right, bye.
Bye bye. All right, thanks again to Sergeant Dan Hills of the FOP for joining us. And now, back-to-back, we have another special guest, which we teased in the beginning. So, so pleased to welcome back our good friend, and we hope yours, Paul Daner Jr. Ollie, how are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm really happy that I'm in the back half of the episode, because I felt like that was where we really did our best work. We were was just Lord knows what we would ever be talking about, and shout out to those people that would actually stick around to the back half of the old That's So Cincinnati's. But no, thank you for bringing me back. It's awesome to be back.
It's been really hard because we can't do anything. So we're like, what'd you do this week? Nothing. How about you? Nothing.
Well, it's really a great opportunity, which, you know, when you said you wanted to have me on, my first thought was, I really want to find out about the duct tape faucet. And I can only imagine what shape that thing is now in a year later. Like, what is the status?
The status is it's the same, and it's still the same tape. The same tape is holding it up. I'm actually sitting here looking at it now. I'm recording this from my car. in front of my house, and I'm looking over at the faucet from where I'm parked. I can see it. It's still holding up nicely, although it is raining, so I can't tell if it's actually leaking or not. But it's the exact same duct tape, and I'm telling you, Paul, man, I must have wrapped that thing like 20 times, man.
Man, I got it. This is incredible. I would have lost a lot of money on that bet. I would have lost a lot of money on that bet that a year later we'd be talking about this thing still holding strong.
Here we are.
Have you reached out to like duct tape to sponsor the podcast? Like, I feel like this is commercial.
Hey, Gorilla Glue. Gorilla Glue, folks, if you're listening, they make a great tape. And as we could see, because I think it actually was Gorilla Glue tape.
In Ohio.
Sporting Cincinnati company. Hey, I want to make sure everyone, for those, this is this week, a year ago this week was Paul's last episode on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. And for those of you who have joined us since then, he is the creator of this podcast. I remember him coming to me in the dead of winter, it wasn't the dead of winter. It was maybe summer of 2018, and we went to O'Malley's in the alley there in downtown, and you presented this to me, and I said, let's do it. Now here we are a couple years later, or almost a couple years later. Sherry jumped in last year to take over for Paul as the co-host of the podcast. Paul has since moved on to the Athletic Cincinnati, doing podcasts over there. And, we just thought it'd be fun to catch up with you.
You know, it's funny. I have all my important conversations at O'Malley's in the alley. It's something about the grilled cheese that I get over there with the tomato soup. I don't know what it is, but I feel like I had a lot of really important conversations at O'Malley's. I don't know why that is, but that was definitely one of them that I very clearly remember. We had multiple of those conversations during the process trying to get it all
going. Yes, we did.
But it's funny. Like, I will say it has been really cool to watch the podcast grow and develop since I left, and you guys take it in the direction that you have, and how great it has been. I still listen, and like that, you know, you see it becoming into, I think, of what you and I talked about in O'Malley's that day, that it would take time, but it eventually could be a really strong platform and one that you can really have a lot of jumping off points. And it's been cool to watch, and kudos to you guys, because it's been really fantastic, everything you guys have been able to do with it. And it's still a great pod.
Thank you.
Big shoes to fill, but you're an early adapter of this. There's a lot of podcasts now, but this like, this is going to be part of the news in the future. You saw that, you knew that.
It's got to be. You know, I love, and especially for what we do, the biggest problem with whether it's news or sports or whatever that I always had was everything feeling so in a box and contrived, and you have these press conferences and it's very stuffy, and then you know these people, you get to know these people, and when they just talk like people, you just learn so much more, and they don't even realize they're giving you so much more, and these let them stretch out, and people now they especially have nothing but time, but you really do you let people stretch out, and people are willing to listen along and come along for the ride with those personalities, and you just learn so much more when you're able to do it. I love that every single person in the world has a podcast now. It's kind of fun. You can just kind of pick and choose with what you want, but because I do really think you learn more to those than you do probably in most other settings.
You've gone over and you've taken that now over to the Athletic with our bud C. Trent and folks over there, and you've when you left the Inquirer, you went over to help launch podcasts over there. Hear that podcast growling? I always want to say hear those Bengals growling, but that's the whole point. You're playing off the song. Hear the podcast growling, not growling, growling.
Yeah, IN apostrophe yes.
And you guys also started the Reds WARP, also a play on two things, WARP, which is a baseball statistic, and WARP in Cincinnati, obviously WKRP. So you've launched those two podcasts, and away you go. And you guys are rolling over there.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's really fun to be a part of what we do locally, and then like the national connectivity is crazy. I mean, Jason, I remember when you covered baseball, like you get to know so many people from that cover the other teams, that cover the league, and you know people all over. Well, it's kind of crazy. We all kind of get to work together now because yeah, we've got whatever like 400 reporters that are under the Athletic umbrella. So every football writer, we work together on stories. We work together on trying to get sourcing for stuff and group project type things where everyone's kind of, you know, putting stuff in a pile together. And and there's so much crossover, whether it's players, you know, working.
Yeah.
I just did something with our Dallas guy on Andy Dalton. And that goes vice versa when other players move and things like that. That connectivity has been really cool to be a part of. And that goes for podcasts too. So yeah, it's fun. There's a lot going on, but it's kind of fun to be in a different world, you know?
Yeah. Sherry?
I believe I've seen on social you actually have big news of your own. Big change, yeah?
What's my big change? Which one? I don't know. Everything changes every day. I'm not sure which one it is.
I think your family's growing. Is that
oh,
right?
Yeah, children. Yeah, they showed up. Yeah, I have my 3-year-old named Mabel who I talked about many times on the podcast back in the day. But yes, now on September 29th, we added to the family. Now I have a daughter named Rose. So Mabel and Rose are here, and you know, we're in the house together every day. Day 56 today. Day 56 of quarantine.
I think and the Meg, younger your kids are, the more you count, actually.
It's an adventure. There is no doubt about that.
And Meg and your wife, yeah. And both of you guys are working, and then, man, and no daycare right now. And gosh, I feel for you.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, and I've really like found it therapeutic to talk about this, but I mean, I have found this to be a very changing, like a self-changing experience. And I don't know how many other people have viewed it this way, but like, I just have felt like I view everything differently. And it seems like this whole thing has cut to the core of what's most important to you. And like, if you were to ask me before this, what some of my like deepest regrets and issues were, it would be that I just felt like the world spins so fast and you're working and you go from here to there, and you just never have enough time to really just sit down and just be there with your family, because you're trying to do stuff. You're trying to go to the zoo, and you're trying to go to the grandparents, and you're trying to do all the things you want to do and work. But this has really forced us all to just really reconnect with our families, even reconnect with, you know, my parents or our, you know, the kids' grandparents. We do daily FaceTimes almost every day. And it's like, that wasn't something that was happening before. And I just think that it kind of has forced everybody, at least I can only speak for myself, to kind of get a better view of what really matters and stop the world from spinning so fast and getting all caught up in the other stuff. So in that fact, being here and just being with the kids every day, like while it's exhausting, it's also been super like life-changing and rewarding in a lot of ways.
I'm glad you brought that up, because 2 weeks ago, a reader emailed me and said they thought I wrote a column just to be a contrarian. And honestly, I didn't. Like, it was, it was obviously from the heart, and just something I was passionate about. I don't even remember what the column was. But I made me take stock. I'm like, oh man, I'm like really being just naturally my thought process right now is I'm dwelling a lot on the negative, not necessarily at work, but just overall. And so I sat down and I just wrote down like all the positives that come from this. And the number one thing I wrote down was like, I'm having family dinners with my family every night. And you're right, Paul, like to step back, this, you know, this is a time when it has been changing, and I'm, not only am I having family, but I'm also there for my kids to take their baths and put them down at night. there's a lot of times that I miss that, you know, this world, this crazy world of journalism that we all live in.
Yeah. And you know what else? I really feel like there's going to be such an appreciation when the world reopens for the things that really, we really, really do enjoy. Like whether it's going to a baseball game or like a zoo or whatever it is that really matters to you and that you've had taken away. I think all that stuff, like I took for granted, like a Friday night at the baseball game in the summer, you know, you take that for granted and you take for granted what that means to you in just your happiness level. And I think once everything reopens, whenever that happens, I like to hope that I will have a lot more appreciation for all those things that really matter to me and a better understanding of what they are after all this, because, you know, I think we as a, you know, as a country, as a city here in Cincinnati, take for granted a lot of the great things that we had, or at least we certainly did. And this probably has, like everything, it's just flipped everything kind of on its head.
No doubt. Sherry?
I agree with all of this. I know how Jack learns now because I've been his teacher. Do I love being that? No. And now it says the hard stuff, so let's be honest there. I don't have to teach a math. Nobody wants that. But I understand, like, what kind of learning he does and what's going to be best for him in the future. And like, these are things I never would have known because his teachers did it or his babysitter did it. And now I do it. And I love knowing these things about him. And I love having a discussion about the books he's reading in school. Like that fell to somebody else before. And so that's been super fun for me. And I'll remember to, I hope, to keep doing it.
Yeah. I feel like there's so many parents that have like learned so much about their kids that they didn't realize, you know. It's just like there's so many idiosyncrasies that were happening away from the house. It's like it really has kind of opened up almost to a new world of them in a lot of ways.
And by the way, I mentioned Megan, and it's only fair to say that it was really truly Megan who created the That's Just Insane podcast when she came to you and said, man, it'd be cool if like the Inquirer started a you know, you have the sports podcast, but what about one on the news side around politics and government? And
that is 100%. That is 100% true, and she would be very happy to have gotten this recognition because it was us having conversations about how cool it would be if there was something like we were doing with the Bengals podcast on the news side, because she works in the prosecutor's office. She's kind of a news Cincinnati. We're both just love the city, from whether it's culture to the people to everything about it. And well, it'd be so cool to have something that kind of encapsulated that out there in that space. So yes, that was like all good ideas that I've ever had. They pretty much all start. And most of them usually start with us and a bottle of wine on the couch trying to figure out what it was. That's how every important conversation has to happen.
The biggest episode, I think, still remains her boss, Jim Peters. Do we know then if he understands that he started this and did he get a raise?
We can only hope. We can only hope. Yeah, no, it's yeah, I mean, it's Joe Dieters, man. It's a big year for him.
Yeah, it is. hey, I got something before we run out of time. Sherry and I did something yesterday that we always used to talk about doing on the podcast.
Tickle pickle. Oh, tickle pickle. How was it?
Oh, amazing.
I know, it was so good.
Wow. Was the first time you'd been there?
First time I'd been. We both went. We did carry out. Called it separate times, whatever. And I'm telling you, for the backstory, for those who don't remember, because we haven't referenced Tickle Pickle in a long time, but our editor, Burl Love, went to Taste of Cincinnati and got what's called the God's Mac. Not God's Smack, God's Mac. And it's these little balls of macaroni and cheese with Grippo's potato chips, barbecue potato chips, you know, crumbled on top of them. And he said it was just amazing. So then it kind of took on a lot. He came on the podcast and talked about it. And then Paul and I just sort of had some fun and started running with Tickle Pickle.
And well, you said the burgers are fantastic over there.
Yeah,
right?
So then it's really kind of a burger joint. At least that's what the menu looked like to me. And so Sherry and I both got a burger. I'll let Sherry obviously tell her about, but I got this burger called the Metallica, and it was an over easy fried egg, bacon, and beef and cheese and mayo. And I'm telling you, I'm hard to please when it comes to burgers. I'm also hard to please when it comes to Cincinnati style chili. But oh man,
in a bowl, like a fool
in a bowl. That's right.
It's ridiculous,
dude. It is a tickle pickle burger is really, really good.
Yeah.
I had the Pearl Jam.
It had
jalapeno jelly on it. It was incredible. Came with a side. There was none of the famous macaroni and cheese, but there was Grippo's potato chips as a side. And it was, honestly, it was amazing. And we did it for lunch. Came time for dinner, and Alex says, "What do you want?" And I was like, "I don't think I'm ever eating again."
I got to tell you, while we're shouting out local places, you know me, I am a sucker and love our good friends over at 50 West. And
yes,
they have we talk about them all the time now. This is honestly like, so I actually did a podcast with Bobby. I would always have Bobby on our Bengals podcast just because he's a huge Bengals fan. We could talk about, you know, beer and food and whatever as well.
Bobby Slattery,
yeah, owner of 50 yeah. West. But so we were taught, we had a really good conversation about what's been interesting to see happen with small businesses in Cincinnati. When since this has happened is really those that have kind of found an acceptance of the need to innovate here and finding new ways to like make things work in this world, and how he sort of found it kind of an invigorating challenge. And it's crazy what they have done. They decided they were building a burger bar next to their Pro Works down there. They already had planned to do that before this happened. They decided to go ahead and go forward with it because, you know, they thought it would certainly open itself up to carry out, and they just wanted to, this was their plan to do it anyway. So they said, but there's a certain number that we're going to have to hit if per week to keep this thing going if we're going to do it. Mm. And basically, as soon as it opened, they sold everything out. They did the number they thought they had to do per week in a day.
Dang,
and so they're like, awesome. It's been incredible to watch the outpouring. And it's not just them. But like, you know, just for me, the ones that I've seen and go to a lot on our side of town, where it'd be Mad Tree or other local businesses, like the lines and the outpouring of people that want to support these places that are trying their best to try to, you know, reach out to make it as easy as possible. The Mad Tree truck that goes around to different area codes every
people's
day.
House.
They announce where they're going to be and do these drop-offs for everybody. I mean, it's just been cool to watch all of that and then to see the way people have kind of given back. And, you know, 50 West has been the perfect example of that. And they have – their burgers are incredible. I went out there and got it, and it was so easy. It's contactless. They just drop it right there. You just drive up and pick it up and go. People are, like, tailgating out there in their parking lot.
I might go out there today.
It's really cool to see not just them, but so many places like that, you know, people have supported to try to help them get through this.
Sherry talked about the new burger bar at 50 West last week when she was out there on a bike ride, and I'm looking forward to trying that.
Should do it. You should definitely do it. It's fantastic. And you can have a Doom pedal while you're at it, Jason, which I know. Is that still holding the trophy as your favorite Cincinnati pop?
Yes, it is. Although I will say, I just had their peach ale. We talked about this in the podcast last week, Chasing Sunset Peach Ale. It's not better than Doom Pedal in my book. It's really good. But they are my favorite brewery. You know, Braxton's probably right there as a number two. But yeah, I will say this though. Wiedemann's, surprisingly, someone mentioned me to try Wiedemann's. I tried their Hefeweizen, and that's also very good. Not as good as Doom Pedal, but nonetheless pretty good.
Also, I will say it is dreamsicle season. If you're a Mad Tree person, it's like an orange vanilla Kolsch that they make there. That I,
never
in my
had
opinion,
that.
Is the best thing they do. You can go get it if you go to their curbside. You can get it in growler. It's not canned right now, so that's pretty much my weekly tradition to go through the Mad Tree curbside pickup and snag a couple growlers of that to have for the week because it's just outstanding.
That is outstanding. Sherry, I'm going to give you the if you have any other questions or comments for PDJ.
I mean, I feel like I just need to throw a topic out, let you go, and then we can be done. You ready? Richard Marx.
Yes. Oh, man. First of all, can I just tell you how great it was for those that have not followed the Richard Marx Twitter account that came out of nowhere.
Woo!
Absolutely out of nowhere to start just being one of the, like, with some of the best, like, shutdowns we've seen on the internet in years. And I was like, I thought Richard Marx was a soft balladeer. Little did I know, Jason Williams was right the whole time. He was had a tough edge. He was a tough guy. Richard Marx.
Take that, Burl.
Man.
Take that, Paul.
You guys all busted
my chops.
I stand corrected. Little did I know how much you will. Any true diehard Richard Marx fan like yourself knew probably that he had this in him. So, you know, you're a pioneer, really.
We don't sing enough on the podcast anymore because I can't sing at all.
I can't either. Now I don't know why we were always singing. It's just unfortunate.
Now and forever, I will be your man.
See, yeah, he said if this is part of like what I bring out of you, Jason.
But you're right. I've been telling you guys that underneath it all, there's a pretty bad, you know, bad guy, not bad guy, but tough guy underneath it all. Underneath the soft ballads, the soft early 90s ballads.
All edge.
I'm telling you. And man, let's just say he's no fan of the president.
To put it lightly, yeah, there is no doubt.
Wow.
About that.
At Richard.
No,
Marx,
how about that?
I will admit, I never knew he was that tough.
It made you look good, though.
Sure does. After all the grief and the guff I've taken from you and Burl and Silent Phil and. The only time Phil ever talks is when he wants to bust my chops for Richard Marx.
And understandable. I mean, I really have never felt stronger that we had never been more in the right on the podcast. And now to see that we were, it makes me rethink everything.
So, I do have to tell you this, PDJ and Cherry, I'll tell you this because I haven't told you this. So, you know, I'll host on Saturday night on WLW. On Saturday nights, fill in here and there. So, you know, they asked for like my intro music, and I gave them like AC/DC Thunderstruck just because I thought, like, you know, that's kind of.
I love hearing it before you come on. I do.
This is the best, though. So, like, I'm kind of thinking about it, and I start, like, I'm like, oh, okay, that's like they're going to use every time I come on now. So, like, you know, 3 weeks later, after I first did the first show, I go to the producer. I can't remember if it was Dave Keaton or Chip Pratt, and I say, "Do you think I could get some like Richard Marx mixed in?" And yeah, it didn't go over well. So
no.
I mean, it was like, yeah, I don't even know if we have that. So. And it was presented to me as like it's going to be too much work, but probably really it was like, no, you don't really want to do that to yourself. And so
you got to be you.
I think on the radio though, you have to be them too. Like the way it's going now kind of fits into their brand and everything. And you know, our brand, Jason and Richard Marx.
Well, there's few things that play more to the 700 WLW base than AC/DC, I'll tell you that much. That's right down the honey hole, as Jeff Braley would say.
It's the perfect intro music. Don't change it, honestly.
Oh, anyway, this has been great. This has been fun.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me on.
I miss it. I absolutely do. I miss being in that tight, hot booth.
Oh yeah,
yeah, have they gotten rid of that? Have they expanded the booth yet so it doesn't get quite so sweaty in there yet?
Nope.
Still there. Still there. Although we do have a fan in there. I don't remember if we added that when you were there.
Oh, no, there was a fan. Yes,
there was. Okay.
Yeah.
We have a little fan in there now. And, yep, still there. Still there.
That is great. I love it. Great. Well, congratulations again, though, man, on everything you guys have been doing. It's been fun to listen to and watch it, be as strong as it's been. So congratulations to you guys. Well, you guys have done a fantastic job, better than I ever could have.
Back at you. Congrats on all the things you're doing, the podcasts you have going at The Athletic. And it's great, you know, and new baby, well, 7 months old now, Rose. And all the great things are going on in your life. And we'll catch back up with you in May of 2021, I guess, right?
I like that idea. I like that idea as an annual tradition. We can reconvene. I love it.
Good stuff, buddy. Take care of yourself. Tell your family today.
Well, you too. See you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.